It's now 8:25. This is the House Resources Committee. I'm Vice Chair Bill Hudson. The chairman today is winging his way to Ketchikan to attend a meeting and to have the weekend off, and he has asked that we go ahead and hear two bills today, or one bill and a joint resolution, Senate joint resolution. We're going to take up Senate Bill 46, authorizing moose farming, and then following that, and we'll be hearing that on teleconference. There's a number of folks on the network here, and we have some people that want to testify. We're going to run that up until 9:40, and then we'll switch over to Senate Joint Resolution Number 13 by Senator Ellis. For the record, we have Representative Mulder, Representative John Davies, Joe Green, and Pat Carney, and myself, Bill Hudson, here. So we have a quorum. And with that, I don't see Mike out here. So Teresa Sager-Stancliffe, who is here representing the senator, will give us our opening briefing on Senate Bill 46. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Teresa Sager-Stancliffe, and I'm staff to Senator Mike Miller. I'd like to read Senator Miller's sponsor statement into the record and then go on to explain a little bit in more detail about the proposal before you in Senate Bill 46. The Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 46 provides for the development of moose and other game farming in Alaska and is intended to expand Alaska's economic development opportunities. Surplus moose, if an actual surplus exists at any given time, can be provided by the state to an individual or group to raise and breed in captivity. The bill also legalizes the sale of farm-raised moose. Under SB 46, DEC, DNR, and Fish and Game are given regulatory authority to ensure the safety and health of animals and handlers and to provide for adequate startup and monitoring of moose farming activities. Safeguards have been added to help prevent disease, a major concern of the Department of Fish and Game, and to implement the proper regulatory controls to ensure a healthy, viable game farming industry in Alaska. Animal husbandry is a priority recommendation of the Agriculture Task Force and was recommended during the Joint House-Senate Economic Task Force mini-summit public hearings. CS for SB 46 is also supported by DEC, DNR, and the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Now, I think what you have in front of you in your packets are a couple of versions of SB 46. One is the version that the Senate Finance Committee adopted and which passed the Senate last year. And the other is a work draft, a blank CS, which is, I believe, version R, that was part of your packets last year. We had the House Resources Committee had one hearing on this bill last session. And I believe that version, that work draft, was part of your packet last year. Both versions of the bill basically provide for the same thing, and I'll talk about those provisions and then explain what the primary changes are between the two. Basically, this legislation expands the game farming statute to add moose and caribou to the list of game animals that can be legally farmed in Alaska. It's fairly lengthy, mainly because some conforming changes were added that that make sure that the game farming statute applies to all species. There was a sort of a piecemeal statute in place, or is a sort of a piecemeal statute in place right now for game that can be legally farmed. And then there was a sort of a separate statute for elk, and the bill is designed to create conformity so that the law in place applies to all of the species. And through the work on Senate Bill 46 in the Senate process, a number of concerns were raised regarding things like disease transmission, escapement of animals from captivity into the wild, and the potential for disease transmission, whether or not moose is a commercially viable game animal that can be raised, and so forth. And so a number of provisions were added to the legislation in the Senate process to try to address some of those concerns. And a person who's interested in game farming and would like to raise one of the animals that's on the list of game that can be legally raised in Alaska, and this would include moose and caribou, would have to register their animals with the three agencies involved, DEC, DNR, and Fish and Game. They would have to pay their $125 game farming license fee. They would have to be certified in their ability to prevent disease transmission, and that would be done by DEC. They would have to prove that they have adequate facilities and fencing to prevent escapement of the captive animals and prevent entry of wild animals into the private facility. They would have to establish a contractual relationship with a veterinarian for visits to their game farm, I believe on a semi-annual basis. And they would also have to prove that they have adequate facilities that are sufficient to prevent injury to animals and to animal handlers. And that's especially important to vets that do inspections and examinations. And once a game farmer is able to prove to the satisfaction of DEC and DNR that they are able to meet these requirements, then they are provided with a certificate and a game farming license. And at that point, if a surplus exists or if Fish and Game has an animal that for whatever reason can be transferred into private ownership, then they can consider issuing a permit or providing this wild game animal to a private game farmer. And at that point, some other requirements would have to be met. There'd have to be branding of the animals in the form, I believe, of a tattoo, ear tags, or some sort of marking or identification that makes the animal easily distinguishable if it does escape from a private facility into the wild so that it can be distinguished from other wild animals. There are some fairly specific notification requirements to the various agencies if an animal escapes, and also notification has to be provided if there's birth, sale, slaughter, or death of animals that are in your facility. And that those provisions are intended to provide for some fairly close monitoring by the agencies of the animals that are on a game farm. And so anyway, those are some of the things that have been included in the bill to try to fairly strictly regulate game farming so that it's a safe enterprise that Alaska doesn't have to be embarrassed over for mistakes or, you know, problems that that could occur if disease transmission becomes a big problem, that sort of thing. And the primary difference between the finance version and then the blank committee substitute is that much of the authority for regulation of game farming once an animal is transferred to private ownership has been shifted from the Department of Fish and Game to DNR and DEC, so that when it becomes an agricultural enterprise, so to speak, that's regulated by DNR. The involvement of Fish and Game in the work draft would be limited to the provision of a wild animal to a private individual who wants to put them on their moose farm or elk farm or whatever it might be. And the last thing I'd like to bring to your attention in your files or in your packets should be a what's labeled a 10-minute moose manual. And that was provided by constituents in Fairbanks who have shown a significant interest in the legislation. And I believe they're on teleconference today and would probably like to speak to it, so I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Teresa. For the record, we're joined by Representative Jeanette James and David Finkelstein. So we now, I think, have nearly a full committee, with the exception of the chair who's on his way. Representative Carney, you had a question, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Has anyone suggested or asked the reason that reindeer are not on the legislation?
There's, I'm trying to refresh my memory, there's been some discussion regarding reindeer, and I guess that there's a question right now as to whether they can be, I know they can be legally raised in Alaska, but I believe it's only by Alaska natives. And I know that...
federal license.
Right, the federal act stipulates that. I'm not sure that the state doesn't have authority to regulate that. I don't know.
Well, what I know about it is that the, of course, there's a federal law that says only Alaska Natives can own reindeer in Alaska, but the Attorney General has agreed to enter into a lawsuit against the federal government in conjunction with a friend of mine who's raising reindeer in a case against the federal government. It would seem to me that, with legislation such as this, if we included reindeer, it would give us a better case. It would put the state on record as saying that we consider this our jurisdiction. I should think that would be a plus.
That's a good point. And I think if you'd look on page 4 of the work draft, which we are confronted before us, it would probably page 4, line 4, would insert in there. And this is something that I think, Representative Carney, we can ask the Department of Fish and Game when they come to the table here. There'll be somebody here to speak to that. But Teresa, you don't know of any specific reason why it's not included in the definition of domesticated game animal. And now we have bison, caribou, elk, moose, and musk oxen. And so,
if I might, Mr. Chairman, I think that that Senator Miller would, I'm fairly certain, would agree to that addition.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carney, this is Doug Witt from the Mattoo office.
Doug, go ahead if you have an insertion here.
Somebody must have told me that word.
Yes. This just a who is he?
I know him, but I don't.
Doug Witt, is that, did I get the last name correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. If you'd like to inject something on that point here, we'd be happy to take it.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, loud and clear.
The key thing here is that reindeer are not included in this bill because they are currently not considered to be a game species. They are a domestic species at this time. And that caribou are added because they are, in fact, a game species. So there's a significant difference.
So you see any problem with them being added to the bill? Do you see any problem with them being added to the bill?
I just don't see why it's necessary because they are not a game species as we speak. They are defined as domestic livestock.
Right, as opposed to domestic game animal.
I see. All right. Thank you very much. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask about the fiscal notes a little bit. I don't have my package here, but I flipped through Representative Finkelstein's package, and I didn't see a fiscal note from DEC. Is there a fiscal note from DEC?
There's
there
a zero fiscal note, but if I might on that subject, unless you were going to, were you going to go on beyond that?
I wanted to just go on and ask about how, you know, and then I noticed that there was a $10,000 DNR fiscal note and a zero fiscal note from Fish and Game, and it just seems like in order to make all the assurances that you had outlined that were added in the Senate version of the bill, it seems hard to imagine that we're going to do all of that oversight for $10,000 total. At least that's what I seem to see happening here. And is that correct, and how can that be?
If I remember correctly from last year, I think that DEC and DNR, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that John Kramer with the Division of Ag is on teleconference. I believe they indicated that they thought, at least to start, there would be a fairly small number of individuals interested in getting into, you know, moose or caribou farming, and they felt that the increased cost wouldn't be significant, especially with the state veterinarian. I think, you know, a semi-annual visit to maybe 5 or 10 more game farms in Alaska wasn't anticipated to be significant enough to require additional money to
carry. Teresa, let me cut you off there because we have a lot of people on teleconference that wish to testify, and what our intention is here today is to try to get as much testimony as possible. We'll get it all side. I'm sure that when the department comes up, John will We'll pose that question to them. Representative Green.
I want to correct something. John, I misled you. There was a Fish and Game, zero fiscal, not a DEC. So I apologize.
All right. You're welcome to kind of stay nearby, if you would, please. And let me see here. Now, we have, looks like about six people that wish to testify on the net, five from Fairbanks. We have Ms. Catherine Smith from Homer that wished to testify. We'll be getting to you folks here pretty soon. Let me now take the Deputy Director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation, Wayne Reglin, and ask him to come to the table and could give us the department's input, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Wayne Reglin, Deputy Director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation. During the past 7 months, the Departments of Natural Resource, Environmental Conservation, and Fish and Game have met several times to discuss game farming and to develop a unified administrative position on game farming. Our goal was to recommend effective legislation that will protect the domestic livestock and game farm industries, to protect our wildlife resources, and to provide a climate for game farming to grow and to prosper. After several meetings, we produced a position paper entitled Farming of Big Game Animals in Alaska. And this position represents the views of all three departments and is supported by Governor Hickel. I have copies of that position paper if you don't have them yet. To briefly summarize,
please give a copy of that, if you would, to staff and really to make copies or distribute them.
There you go.
Go ahead and proceed, sir.
Yes. Now, to briefly summarize what's in this position paper, the administration supports game farming and believes it has the potential to grow into a viable and sustainable industry. And we believe for growth to occur, we require consistent state policies, stability in state laws, and effective regulations. The key points in the administration position are that we would initially limit game farming to the four species currently allowed by state law. That's reindeer, bison, elk, and muskox. But we'd provide a regulatory mechanism to expand this list of species that may be farmed. But it would prohibit the farming of non-indigenous species to protect our wildlife species. We wouldn't allow exotics from other countries. Farming of caribou by non-natives is prohibited by the Federal Reindeer Act of 1937. Now, that federal law limits ownership of reindeer in Alaska to natives, but it also defines captive caribou as reindeer. And until the federal law is changed, we don't think that caribou should be included as a species that can be farmed because it would create a real legal problem. And we're not recommending farming of moose as a commercial enterprise. The biological attributes of moose make them unsuitable for commercial game farming. However, due to the interest by some citizens to raise moose, we're going to recommend creation of a new permit called an experimental animal husbandry permit that would allow individuals to hold moose or caribou in captivity. Now, caribou could be held under this experimental game farm or experimental animal husbandry permit because the state would retain ownership of these animals. They'd just be held on a permit. Under what our position, the Department of Natural Resources would have the responsibility and the authority to regulate most aspects of game farming. The Department of Environmental Conservation would have authority for animal health regulations, and Fish and Game would have authority over surplusing animals for game farming, for issuing these animal husbandry permits, and joint responsibility with DNR for adding species to the list of game-farmed animals. We believe that our position and these recommendations will lead to a strong game farming industry in Alaska while protecting our wildlife resources. Now, I have a two-page handout that I haven't given to anyone yet that describes how several other states are regulating their game farm industry. During the past 5 years, several states, and most of the western states, have revised their statutes and regulations related to game farming. And the reason for this is that there's been a great interest in game farming, and especially in elk in the western U.S., so it was necessary to have some more regulations. And the concern, one of the concerns was on importation of red deer from New Zealand created great concerns about hybridization in the western U.S. And then the occurrence of tuberculosis in the elk in Alberta increased concerns about game farm animals spreading disease to domestic livestock and to wildlife. Now, the regulations adopted by most of these states restrict game farming to certain species, and then they require disease testing, permanent animal identification, and records to track animal movements. And these are the same types of things that we're recommending in our position paper. Now, John Kramer is the Director of Agriculture, or the Division of Agriculture, and he was instrumental, along with me and Kit Ballantyne from DEC, in putting this position paper together. Kit is here in the room. If you have questions for her, John could answer them over the phone. I also have here Dr. Charles Swartz, who's director of the Moose Research Center in Soldotna. And I hope you can provide a few minutes for him to present some information relative to moose farming and moose management. And we'd be happy to answer any questions, and we would offer that the people that myself and John Kramer and Kit Ballantyne to work with the committee or whoever you would choose to help put some of our recommendations into draft legislative form.
Thank you very much, Wayne. There is a question from Linda Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You say that the Reindeer Act of 1937 also includes the ownership of caribou as well as reindeer?
Well, the only time it refers to caribou is it says any captive caribou is classified as a reindeer, which couldn't be more clear. It just defines reindeer as reindeer or captive caribou.
Thank you.
Are they the same animal?
They're the same species, but they're very different. The reindeer have been domesticated for thousands of years. They have a much bit different body conformation and short legs. They're very tame and docile animals, whereas caribou are quite different. They have long legs and they're wild.
In the Soviet Far East, we saw literally hundreds, if not thousands, of head. Were they caribou, I presume? They were caribou, I imagine. That's their major farming there.
In Siberia, they have a large reindeer industry, and most of them in Siberia are reindeer, not caribou. Mm-hmm. And that's where our animals came from that are in western Alaska.
All right, Wayne, if you would, you'll be here with us for a little while, too, so if we have any further questions, good. I think we'll follow on now with Chuck Schwartz, who is the director of the Moose Research Center. Thank you for coming today.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to talk this morning. I'm Dr. Chuck Schwartz. I direct the Moose Research Center in Soldotna. And I was asked to speak to you today by Commissioner Rozier and provide some information on several issues that will hopefully clear up some confusion that has existed in the past. I'd like to talk about the moose in Sweden, moose farming in the Soviet Union, and then about the Moose Research Center here in Alaska. First, I'd like to speak about moose management in Sweden. I had the opportunity to travel to Sweden to the second International Moose Conference several years ago and went throughout quite a bit of the country and experienced firsthand what was going on. Sweden's about one-third the size of the state of Alaska, to put it into perspective. They have somewhere between 300,000 to 450,000 moose in the country. Annually, they kill about 150,000 animals. If you'd like to compare that to the state of Alaska, we have about 120,000 animals, roughly, in our population. We harvest somewhere around 7,000 moose, much fewer than they do in Sweden. There's no moose farming in Sweden. The reason that Sweden has a very large productive moose herd is directly related to the agricultural and forestry practices that they have in the country. They have an extremely intensive forest management program. Second, Scots pine, which is the major forest tree in the country, also is palatable and eaten by moose. In Alaska, for example, our major conifer is spruce, and it's not palatable to moose. Third, there are virtually no predators in Sweden. There's fewer than 20 wolves, and brown bears are extremely rare, so there's no predation. And fourth, they harvest, almost half of their harvest is calves. To compare that to Alaska, most of the calves that are born in Alaska are eaten by predators. So that's the difference between Alaskan situation and Sweden. The second issue that I'd like to talk about to you then today is farming in the Soviet Union. I also had the opportunity to visit the Soviet Union as the North American chairman for the third International Moose Symposium, and I chaired the session on moose husbandry in domestication. The Soviets began experimenting with moose farming in the 50s, and it was collective farms that were built in three different areas. They had a farm in Kostroma, one in Gorky, and one in Yaksha. When I attended the meeting, two of those three farms had been closed down. They were not successful. They looked at farming moose for both meat production and milk production. They looked at it from the standpoint of velvet antler production, as well as using moose for draft animals and riding. And they had abandoned all their efforts at domestication. The only facility that was still operating when I was there was the one at Yaksha, and it had basically been converted to a research facility, similar to what we have here in North America. There were some major differences in the way the Soviets attempted to ranch or farm moose in the way it probably would occur in Alaska. They turned their animals out. The animals were bottle raised, they were tame. The animals were turned out into the forest at night. And what they fed on was logging slash. There was a fairly extensive logging program, and these animals were basically eating the tops of the trees. Each animal had associated with it a milkmaid. And these women would go out in the morning and call these animals, and they would come out of the forest back to the facility where they were milked. They were kept in the facility during the day. They were fed potatoes and various grains, and then milked about six times a day, and then in the evening they were re-released back into the wild. Milk production in these animals was about 3.5 liters per day. That's about 8 pounds of milk per day. The total production period was about 65 to 70 days, so a cow moose over that period would produce about 495 pounds of milk, and these are averages. But to put that into perspective, the average dairy cow, for example, has a production period of about 305 days, and during that time she'll produce about 10,600 pounds of milk, substantially different. The Russians do claim that moose milk is therapeutic. I had the opportunity to taste it while I was there. They had some available. It does not taste like cow's milk. It does not have a nice sweet flavor. It's musty and it's very heavy with fat. And I would not rate it as highly palatable. There are no commercial moose farms in Russia today. They've been closed down. The third thing I'd like to talk about then is the Moose Research Center here in Alaska. The Moose Research Center was built by the Department of Fish and Game in the late 1960s, and the facility is 4 one-square-mile areas that are fenced, and then we have a series of smaller holding pens where we can conduct more controlled research programs. We've had hand-raised moose at the facility since 1978, and we maintain those animals on an artificial diet. The ration that we give them was developed at the center, and it contains about 25% aspen sawdust. Moose are not easy to maintain in captivity, and they don't live as long in captivity as they do in the wild. Based upon a survey that I conducted several years ago, where I talked to people that have moose in captivity across all of North America, the average life expectancy of a moose is about 8 years, and about 70% of all the calves that are born under captive conditions die before they're 1 year of age. We've been much more successful as far as raising calves at the research center, but what we do is we do not hand raise the calves. We allow the cow to raise them for us. The consequence of this is the fact that these calves are no longer tame and tractable. Our moose at the research center are not domestic animals. They're simply wild animals that have been tamed or accept human handling. So with that, I'll stop, and if you have some questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Senator Carney?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd like to request that the statistics that you quoted regarding the production of moose in Sweden.
Milk production or moose?
No, I'm talking about moose in animals harvested. Mm-hmm. We made available to the committee for our intensive game management.
I can do that, yes. It's very published.
Information. And I think that in our intensive game management bill has been labeled a wolf eradication bill, because no one seems to be focusing on the possibilities of intensively managing our forest land to provide more habitat. So I'd be interested in any information you have on what the Swedes are doing in habitat management. Perhaps it's for other reasons, but it equates to more moose populations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's your thoughts on the threats of disease and the other downside, the risks involved?
Well, there's threats both ways. There would be threats of disease organisms being brought into the state if we have animals, for example, moose coming in from outside that could potentially bring pathogens in. For example, in western or in eastern Canada, there's a tick. It's the wood tick that heavily infests wild populations of moose right now. There can be up to several hundred thousand individual ticks on a moose. If you see these animals in the spring, they call them ghost moose. Their hair is completely rubbed off. They're covered with just thousands of these engorged female ticks. And quite a few of the biologists in the area feel that this animal, in fact, causes or can cause heavy overwinter mortality because it represents a stress to the individual animals. Several years ago, the department, we were concerned about the possibility of this tick getting into the state of Alaska. So, in fact, we took gravid females under extremely controlled conditions and wintered them in Alaska to see if, in fact, they could survive our weather and lay eggs. Well, they can, okay? So
they can?
They can. And so they probably could live. This was on the Kenai Peninsula. They probably could live on the Kenai Peninsula. The reason they're not there now is obviously they haven't been able to get there because of natural geographic barriers, more severe winter weather in the interior Canada and in Alaska. So those animals have not been carried naturally. But if they're artificially carried, they certainly could live, and it could cause a lot of problems for our wild moose herds. As far as the other way around, for example, moose are prone to several diseases that are carried by domestic livestock. Malignant catarrh fever is one. Sheep carry this disease, and it doesn't seem to affect them in a lethal manner, but it kills moose. And so you can have disease going that direction. Now, certainly diseases can be controlled, those issues can be addressed. As far as maintaining animals in captive conditions and expecting them not to mix with the wild, based, again, on our experience at the research center, we have secure fences, but we regularly have wild moose get into our facilities. They cannot jump a 10-foot fence, but they can jump about 7.5 feet and break the rest of the fence down and get in. We do have wild moose get in, and we have had our animals get out. And the reason our animals have gotten out in the past is if you have a domestic or a tame bull inside and a wild bull that meets up with him outside during the rut, those animals will fight. Normally, when moose fight during the rutting season, it's a pushing contest, and whoever can push the hardest wins. Well, you place a wire fence between those two animals, and they can't determine who's strongest because the fence is what's strongest. Well, what happens is these two animals did this, and they ripped a big hole in our fence, and our bull got out. Now, he was a tame animal, and he wound up coming back, and we...
Who won?
We got him in. Well, we don't know. We weren't there. I mean, these are the kinds of things that happen at night when you're, you know, we weren't watching the fence in this one particular location. So those kinds of things can happen, and there certainly is a high likelihood that you'll have mixing, even with the best security. So,
Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Referred to the research center down in the Kenai.
Yes, sir.
Could you describe it for us? How many animals do you have?
We have 26 moose at the facility, and we have projects going on right now to evaluate the effects of selective harvest on moose genetics. The Board of Game passed a law which made spike, fork, or 50-inch moose legal for harvest. All others are protected. Well, the department has some concerns that because we are selectively targeting an individual antler type, that the potential exists to remove that antler type with heavy hunting pressure. So we have a project going on where, in fact, we are looking at that. An individual that works at the research center, Chris Huntermark, is ahead of that project. He's actually going back to Fairbanks and he's going to get his doctorate degree working on that. So that's one of the projects. We have quite a few studies looking at moose reproduction, trying to quantify various aspects of moose reproduction, and this is directly related to bull-cow ratios in the wild and herd management. We have an open-ended technique study that we test any new product that potentially comes along. All of the drugs that are used on moose by our personnel throughout the state are first tested at the research center, and carfentanil, for example, which is the drug that we use now, was tested at the facility. It's going to go off the market, so we're going to have to find something else. But just here recently, we tested ultrasound, the same equipment that's used on humans for pregnancy testing. We're using it to look at body condition in animals to make an assessment of range quality. We're also using it or looking at the possibility of using real-time ultrasound to detect the number of fetuses within a cow, which again will give a biologist an indication of the quality of the range that he has.
As an old farmer, you know, we
really do have an awful lot, so we kind of keep the answers and the questions and answers pretty short so we can get a lot of testimony here today. Representative Mulder, go ahead and follow up, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. Follow up. How many square miles do you have on your?
We have four square miles, which is a substantial three. It's about 1,600 acres, and it's actually 2,400 acres. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Our animals are put in these pens during the summer. They feed on natural vegetation, and then in the fall we bring them in and we feed them this ration. We try to allow them to eat as much natural food as we can because it keeps our costs down. And in what they eat depends on the particular study that we're doing. The thing about moose is you cannot stock large numbers of moose per square mile. An average density in the wild, for example, on the most excellent range that we have is about 16 animals per square mile. Normal typical boreal forest may carry 1 to 2 moose per square mile, and that's the stocking rate. It's because they eat browse, not other vegetation. So.
That's really what I was asking in relation to, because I remembered your quote or your statistic there. So you obviously augment their
right,
diet.
Yes, and we do it because we need large sample size for the kinds of studies that we do.
Thank you, Mr.
Green.
Very briefly, thank you, Mr. Chairman. These other animals that have been successfully farmed are by nature, aren't they, herd-type animals?
They're gregarious species, that's correct. Bison are herd-forming animals. Elk are herd-forming animals. Reindeer are herd-forming animals. Moose are not. Moose are classified as either solitary or individualistic-type animals, and they do not aggregate. The average group size for moose, if you find them in the wild, is about 2.5, and that's over the entire year, and that's including these large breeding groups during the reproductive period. They're a different critter.
And the other real quick question was that you've indicated that you have to supplement their diet. Aren't they pretty inefficient type animal?
They're difficult to keep, and that's one of the problems in captivity. You know, everybody's heard about Morty the moose and the fact that Morty died. Well, this goes directly back to the nutritional requirements of the animals, and it's still not worked out entirely what they need under captive conditions. And again, looking at moose that were kept in captivity by zoos all across North America is where the statistics came up with. Zoos have not figured it out either. They're a hard animal to keep under captive conditions.
Thank you.
Representative Carney?
Just a quick question. Did you say that in Sweden they harvest the moose calves?
Yes. Yes, they do.
How do they do that?
They shoot them.
They just shoot them in the spring?
Sweden's under the European system of hunting, and they go out and kill. Yeah, they shoot them. So it's basically, it's like we hunt, only they market hunt. They don't sport hunt. They market hunt. It's legal to buy the right to kill
some
30 or 40
farms.
Moose and sell them. But they're wild animals. They're not raised under captivity.
Are they similar to the deer farms of the East, I presume, in the Midwest? Huh?
No, there's no fences.
No,
there are no fences. These are animals that live in a wild environment. The difference is the landowner owns the right to shoot the animal. It's not a public resource. It's a private resource. And they harvest them, and then it's legal to sell the animal.
But
once
they're not fenced.
No, the only fences for moose in Sweden occur along their major highways, and that's to keep the animals off the road so that they don't have automobile accidents. But they're not fenced. There's one research facility similar to ours, but that's not for farming animals. That's for research.
All right, at this time, we're going to go out on teleconference here, and I'm going to start out in Homer. We have Ms. Catherine Smith, and then I'll go from there to Fairbanks, and we'll take Bud Bliss first in Fairbanks. So, Ms. Catherine Smith, welcome to the committee meeting. We'd like to have your testimony, please.
Okay, thank you very much. And I might note that there are two speakers here in Homer. I'll begin once again with Mrs. Kathy Smith. I'm a certified wildlife biologist. I'm a member of the Homer Fish and Game Advisory Board, and I'm also here speaking today on behalf of the Kachemak Bay Conservation Society. On my own part, in 1983 I was a graduate of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Master's Program in Wildlife Management, and I've been working ever since with Alaska's Big Game or as a consultant in the game farming industry. I was project director and a manager of a private elk farm at high elevation in Hawaii. And there I oversaw construction of state-of-the-art quarantine and handling facilities for elk and the importation of about 50 head of animals from the mainland in 1987. The herd is now up to several hundred animals and doing well as long as a very rigorous, and I emphasize rigorous, health program and supplemental nutrients are provided. Even with year-round pasture and benign conditions that you find in Hawaii, it is extremely expensive to keep fenced animals healthy and handlers safe. And elk are a herd animal, as Dr. Schwartz mentioned, and they're very tractable and easy to handle as compared to moose. Moose are much more of a challenge and I think a big mistake. In the winter, moose are far-ranging browsers. They wander far as lone animals or cow-calf units. And what they're doing is seeking high-quality, low-availability willow, cottonwood, and birch buds and tender stems. What happens when you lock them in by fences is that they quickly run out of this limited dietary requirement of high protein and roughage. And any supplements that you would end up having to provide are very costly. And the fencing and feeding of moose also creates conflicts and problems between animals who do not naturally group together. With a high cost of game fencing, I don't think anyone can afford to fence enough area to adequately provide for moose. I agree with Charles Swartz of the Salat Research Center that animals are subjected to poor diet and interspecies aggression and mishandling by caretakers who do not understand their needs or know how to provide for them when you get into Alaskan conditions. It's also, I think, very difficult to define what constitutes an adequate handling facility. And it would be even more difficult for the state to regulate this and make sure that animals are adequately cared for and that disease transmission is not a major issue. Moose are proven as a poor choice for intensive game farming, not only in Sweden and in Russia, but also closer to home in more similar environments. The University of Alberta did studies around Edmonton, as did the University of Saskatchewan and Saskatoon, and they both concluded that moose are not suitable for game farming. protection is already overtaxed, understaffed, and underfunded in their efforts to check the illegal take of moose. This bill will promote poaching and black market sale of meat by creating a market incentive. When you add to that the disease transmission risk to wild stock, which is a very real problem when animals are confined, housed, or trucked to new locations and sold and traded, I think SB 46 unnecessarily places one of the state's most significant subsistence animals at risk and threatens the lifestyle of native and rural Alaskans. Sort of in wrapping it all up, I'd like to say from one that has been actively involved in the industry for over 10 years, I assure you that the state has nothing to gain from SB 46, and it will in fact cost Alaskans substantial funds, and personnel will be diverted to administer, research, and regulate this very ridiculous bill. Promoting moose farming at a time when the state doesn't even have enough money for existing programs and needs just does not make sense. As such, I respectfully urge the committee to not foster this very harmful and very costly legislation. Thank you, and I'll pass the mic to the next speaker.
Thank you, Catherine. We are going to stay with the list we have here. Let me check first of all with teleconference. Do you have others from Homer that have testified, that have signed up? All right. If they would, through your telecommunications there, go ahead and put their name down, and I'll come back to you in a minute. I want to try to take first come, first served here, and we do have some folks in Fairbanks been waiting there as well. So we'll take them, but we'll go ahead through this other list first. I'm going to move now to Fairbanks. I'd like to talk to Mr. Bud Bliss, please.
First, I'd like to give a little brief resume of the experience that I've had. I've raised buffalo for over 20 years and over 15 years on wild mountain sheep, wild goats, and deer. By this game farming, the individual private owners of these moose are bearing all the expense on raising and propagating these animals, which in a number of years they will be able to sell the meat, which has already been proven to be a much higher quality than beef. The production of moose, where in a couple of years they're going to be, or rather after their first calf crop, they will be dropping twins, which is much better than the beef cattle that is raised today, which only, the majority of the cases, only have one calf per year. The knowledge that is gained by the private sector in raising these animals will help everybody in the state of Alaska, and it will certainly bring a good revenue into this state. This information is acquired from what has happened down lower 48 in all these exotic animal ranches, and they've been able to go ahead and maintain their same lifestyle and are making a living raising a diversified farming or game ranching down in the lower 48. I very strongly recommend that this bill be passed so that moose farming with the elk and musk ox, caribou, reindeer, would benefit the whole state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Bud. Now we're going to move to Stanley. Ned Stanley and the others who are following on teleconference, because we're running out of time here, try to keep your answers and your input, if you would, please, down to a minute or two. Thank you. Stanley, Ned, please.
My name is Stanley, and I'm representing Kalamazoo. We're on board to Senate Bill 46. I'll let you set before that CTC was in favor of the bill. It actually was a staff member who was in favor of this bill. When it was brought to the attention of our elders, they were really stunned that such a thing could happen because of our religious practices, such as our funeral potlatches and memorial potlatches. And because the threat of the disease that this domestic stock might bring in to our wild stock, and we don't want that problem there. And he will be giving a longer written testimony from me. For these reasons that I've stated, we are opposed to Senate Bill 46.
Thank Thank you, Mr. Ned, and we would appreciate any input that you might have in writing, and that goes to the same of the rest of you as well. Jeremy Welton, please.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Welton, and I support Ms. Farming. Please pass the bill for last chance for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Opal Welton, please.
Hello to you all. This is Opal Welton here. I hardly know where to start. First off, the Fish and Game Department has come up with a different approach here to being opposed to moose farming. In this most recent position paper and bill, the Fish and Game Department has lied about the domestic moose. Last year, in the testimony to the Senate Resource Committee, four people testified warning of the Fish and Game Department being far less than honest about this issue. I'd like to quote a Washington newspaper concerning the Fish and Game Department of the Lower 48 disease problems. The paper testifies that legislative testimony has shown that disease problems on deer farms have occurred only in states where they have been regulated by wildlife agencies. There have been no problems where animal disease control on deer farms is handled by state departments of agriculture. Also to testify further as to the Fish and Game Department's lies and deceit to the public and to you folks and to the governor and now to DEC and DNR. About 2 years ago, Dr. Lyle Reniker, who's the head of the reindeer department up here, and he's had 8 years experience with domestic moose, came out, here's a statement, I'll read it to you. There has been several memos that have been circulated to legislators that refer to disease and testing and have originated from the Fish and Game Department. These memos have not presented all the facts about disease testing, disease status, and disease research. In fact, some of the data and facts collected for these memos are incorrect. And I could bring up more testimony on the lies and deceit from the Fish and Game Department. I would like to bring up a statement that Wayne Raglan made. He's quoted in the Fairbanks Daily News Miner from May 11th of 1992, and he states that he acknowledges that no disease problems have surfaced at the state's Kenai Moose Research Facility in 25 years of operation. He states that there's no doubt people can do this, but the pressure to explain the state interest in such a private investment decision, Raglan acknowledged the agency's opposition as primarily philosophical. I came across a moose husbandry report by Charles Schwartz, which I find very interesting. And also we have, you folks all down there have the information on the Moose Research Center. The Moose Research Center has provided information that's supposed to help moose management. Wayne Raglan is also in this information. Zoos and research facilities consider moose difficult to maintain in captivity. Due to lack of suitable diet, our task was to develop a formulated ration for moose. Our ration is called the Moose, the MRC Special. Our ration has been so successful that it is now used by several zoos to feed moose. It was gratifying to make it possible for the moose to be elevated to an immensely popular exhibit animal. I could go on, but since you already have you should have a copy of this information, I would just like to read what they had done at one time was, this is in reference to the Fish and Game Department concerns about the putting too many moose in too small of an area. One pen stock of 44 moose in autumn contained only 14 animals the following
Opal, if you could wrap up for me, please.
Well, it states in this moose husbandry report that moose are easily kept inside standard game fencing. It also goes on to state that moose are well adapted to the northern environment. Stocking rates vary. It states that moose are very compatible with, it states that over half the facilities kept other species with their moose. Ungulate species included white-tailed deer, mule, black-tailed deer, wapiti, caribou, reindeer, bison, and several other animals. There was a facility that even kept black bears in with their moose. Several people indicated that moose are very compatible with the other species, having no behavioral patterns and fighting between moose and mixed hoof stock.
Opal, thank you very much. If you could or would like to present the committee with any testimony or backup information, we're trying to just become informed at this moment. And with that, I would like to move next to Doug Welton.
Good morning. First, I'd like to say hello to all of you down there, and thank you, Bill Williams, for allowing this hearing and for it to be teleconference. You'll have to understand that we worked on this for 6 years, and 1 minute just doesn't quite give us enough time to express ourselves. This issue has been around for many years, and I think we can honestly say that although it's apparent that a moose named Bill can even live in the Capitol, it's time to move him out of committee and get it into the hands of the private sector. Then we will be able to do more with them and their kind than just argue back and forth and create more paperwork. We will begin to do what needed to be done years ago. I spoke to the governor the other day when he was here in Fairbanks, and he assured me that this bill will not be vetoed. So that brings me to, I like that, because in the past that's been a big threat. He said that he didn't believe that it's the role of the government to decide whether something like raising moose would be economical, and that he strongly supports game farming of muskox and reindeer, bison, and elk, but that there are still some questions about the moose being conducive to farming. In other words, over the years, we've had the endurance and the facts to prove almost every one of their excuses wrong. We have done enough research to readily admit and acknowledge all of the biological peculiarities that are inherent with the moose, and so we have always been an advocate of small family farm type operations, and only in their natural habitat and lots of it. Nobody can tell me that these animals are perfectly adaptive and conducive to the things that we have fought for. You can call what you do with an animal anything you want. In this case, it's been labeled farming. The state calls what they do with their moose research, and I am grateful for the work that has been done down there on that farm or that ranch or facility or whatever you want to call it. I like the word station. I think we should call them moose stations. And I think there should be moose stations all across the state to bring in the hurt and the injured and the wayward moose that are causing thousands of accidents on our streets today. I think that should be the feedstock to a farming operation. But regardless of what you call it, the moose is in fact equipped and able to adapt to many situations and uses, and is much too valuable to ignore. This issue got started with one very young orphan moose, and that's where it needs to get back to. Over the 6 years, I've heard them be farmed, ranched, researched, rode, raced, fettered to gas pumps, going to schools, in parades, poached, stolen, hybridized, diseased, bought, sold, auctioned, tranquilized, fenced, eaten by bears, wolves, and even in fast food restaurants. But the fact is, it's all been done in our minds and in these meetings. So far, we've not been able to allow to save one more moose. The orphan we had was sent to Germany, and nobody can tell me that that man has not prospered. We are still interested in salvaging this valuable resource and putting them to a variety of uses. And I'm getting tired of hearing that all we want is a pet. Is the horse you hunt from a pet? Is the cow that you milk a pet? It's your call, but I still don't think that that is all that bad. Let's realize one thing. The opponents have now been forced to use the only one excuse that they have left. And notice how what has been for years the number one reason to be against this is gone. Disease took us 6 years to deal with, and I'm pleased to see it disappear from the position paper. To have to boil it down to behavior, I think, is very ironic. But I believe that it has more to to do with the behavior of the people in a certain office than it does with that of the moose. There's a lot of work that needs to be done out there. Well, on the Kenai Peninsula alone, we Alaskans are running over 3,000 moose a year. There are more moose in Homer at McDonald's and in Anchorage and in Fairbanks than vast stretches of the wilderness. And until we do some major habitat work away from the cities and roads and railroads, we will continue to have increased problems. This is an effort to put more moose on the barbecue grill than on the grill of a vehicle. And this effort has targeted the areas that could use an economic option that do not have one today, in addition to all the other businesses that will be affected positively. There are enough moose out there right now limping around that could set start many of families on the road to recovery and a rural lifestyle that will help both them and the moose. Imagine that, less roadkill, less accidents, and less loss of human lives, replaced by little moose stations that are attempting, that will attempt to do something very positive with this situation. I'm so tired of just talking about this. Let Bill go, guys. You know, there's even a couple of attorney generals in favor, and they claim that this is already legal, and there's thousands of us Alaskans that say, why not? We should surely have the chance to try. Please send the committee substitute for Senate Bill 46, not the House version by the Fish and Game, to the Rules Committee for scheduling on the floor, and get 40 more Alaskans who are actually in a position to help a vote on this as soon as possible. It's time for the legislature to bless this mess and focus us all on the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Doug Harold Gillum, please.
Good morning. I want to first thank Representative Carney for picking up on the advantages of forest management. This is a quick calculation, and I recognize this is very, very rough. But if Sweden is one-third the size of Alaska, and it has roughly three times as many moose as Alaska does, they're raising moose on a ratio of about 9 to 10 times the ratio that we are. If we're getting 1 to 2 moose per square mile as a normal range, Sweden must be getting something like 10 to 20 per square mile. I've personally seen moose herd. I used to live in the bush quite a bit, and I've seen groups of 9 to 14 together during the wintertime and stay together. I think the biggest threat to subsistence hunting in Alaska is the lack of intensive management that we are practicing today. I've testified before that is that we're doing a lousy job as far as recognizing that animals do need some preference, do need some help. Now, getting back to this particular bill, I'm strongly in favor of it. If at any time we can let people develop, that's better. Yes, and I'll suggest one thing to you. And if we are not going to open up moose farming, that we have an area that we can save some money in, and that is that the moose farm should be closed because it's not serving any useful purpose. If we're going to continue moose farming, or allow moose farming, then the unit has some need. But otherwise, it is just it doesn't make sense to keep it in operation. Thank you.
Thank you, Harold. Santiva Quinn. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that transmission. All right, thank you very much. Then we're going to go back to Homer. Mr. Chris Rainwater, please.
Yeah, this is Chris Rainwater from Homer. Got in a little late and didn't hear all your testimony today. I'm going to keep mine brief. I'm basically in favor of this bill. Moose has been coming into my ranch. I have a beef cattle ranch here. Moose has been coming in and wintering on my ground for the last 30 years. Never lost one yet. They seem to do real well in the area that I live. They eat my hay, they eat the grass that I feed my cows, and they eat the willows that remain on the ranch. And I know there's many problems that have been outlined
Thank you, Mr. Rainwater. That concludes the number of people who have asked to testify on teleconference. We do have one further one here in Juneau, Gloria Gill, who had asked to testify and would be invited to the table at this time.
Mr. Vice Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Gloria Gill, and I'm a volunteer working for the Environmental Lobby, Alaska Environmental Lobby. We are a coalition of 20 Alaskan environmental groups. This is my first testimony, so a little nervous.
You're totally at ease, Gloria. This is very informal, and we like to hear what you have to say.
Thank you, sir. The Alaska Environmental Lobby opposes Senate Bill 46, a bill that would legalize moose farming and the sale of moose meat. We feel we have a couple of reasons here, and I have a couple of examples. Moose farming may put wild animals at increased risk of disease. The escape of captive animals, as we've heard in the testimony so far, is inevitable. If a disease such as TB would ever get established in the wild, it would be a permanent source of infection for native species. I'd like to read a sentence from a newspaper article from the Missoulian called Game Farms, Wild Game in West's Wild Debate. By mid-1992, Alberta officials had euthanized 2,600 captive elk to stop the spread of bovine tuberculosis, and will wait years to see if they successfully kept the disease out of the province's wildlife and cattle. We have many, many articles that point to statistics like that where the animals have had to be destroyed because of the threat of disease. Moose farming may be detrimental to predator populations. Domesticated animals are easy prey for bears and wolves. Farmers would be forced to protect their investment. The usual means used in Kodiak and other areas of Alaska has been to shoot them. I was at Kodiak one time, and I ran into a man at Cowson Bay who had shot hundreds of bears who had invaded his ranch there. It was a horrifying thing to hear. And
cattle ranch?
It was a cattle ranch. And he was very proud of all the bears. He was known as the Bear Man, although I don't know his real name. He's called the Bear Man there. He's killed more bears than anybody on the island, evidently. And I talked to another worker of a ranch in Kodiak yesterday that said they used to raise cattle, but they had lost so many cattle to bears and had so many troubles with the bears that they had now decreased cattle ranching and taken up buffalo ranching, because the buffalo will herd together and protect one another, and the bears were not attacking the buffalo as they had been. They had lost over 100 cattle by bears. And then the third and final reason here, the legalized sale of moose meat creates financial incentives to take the animals illegally. And we feel that poaching may increase if this is allowed to happen. Thank you.
I'd buy a moose burger right now if I could find one. I love it. You know, we don't have any out here, Jenna. Oh, we do, but I mean, they're...
I'll send you some, Bill.
Is that legal? I don't know. Don't say that in front of these guys.
Put it on your APOC.
Thank you very much. I also, you know, I followed that cattle ranching out and... on Kodiak Island, you know, it used to be quite a big operation, but the bear population, I guess, has almost tripled out there. It went from, I don't know what it is, but it's well up over 3,000 or 4,000 bear and big bear in that area, too. And the buffalo seem to have the instinct of somehow knowing when the bear's coming up on them and are able to get away from them. They're much more rangy and able to do it. They seem pretty good. That concludes now the people that I had listed to testify. I'd like to have Teresa come back up to the table, if she would, please. Teresa, in the absence of your senator, we have heard a lot of testimony here today. I'm sure there'll be more. But one of the things that we did hear from the department was that they would like to get together with the sponsor and perhaps find some amendments that would satisfy the department. And what this committee does with it is not known at this time, but would like to know if you believe that the senator would be willing to take the bill and sit down with the department and then come back to the committee with a revised draft, a new work draft that tried to incorporate some of the concerns of the department in it.
If I could just add, I think Senator Miller would be very agreeable to doing that. If we could also work with DEC and DNR as appropriate, since they did work with Fish and Game on the game farming policy, in order to come back to you with some recommendations.
Very good. Then I believe the acting chair here will go ahead and discontinue further hearing on this bill at this time and ask the sponsor to get with the department and to look over the other testimony we received here today and see just how close we can come to finding any kind of a compromise, if there is one. And then when you're prepared, if you would notify the chairman or through the staff at any rate, and the chair will very likely reschedule a hearing. So with that, thank you very much, all of you, for testifying on this bill here today. Next, we're going to take up Senate Joint Resolution number 13, opposing export North Slope crude oil. And we have Senator John Ellis with us. Johnny, welcome to the table. Welcome back to your alma mater, whatever.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to members of the committee. I appreciate you bringing up the bill. I plan to be pretty brief this morning. I don't think there's much controversy associated with the bill. All these other folks are discussing it excitedly. I feel support growing for the
support is growing
resolution.
Either that or they're leaving. I'm not sure which.
I've always felt, too, Mr. Chairman, that whenever a senator could possibly make it over to the House to advocate for their own bill, that they should do so, having been a member of this body and felt slighted in the past by senators. I've made the effort to be here last meeting and today as well. So a few things have taken on the motherhood and apple pie status of lifting the export ban on Alaskan crude, because there's few things that have as much revenue to the state of Alaska at stake as does this issue. About $2.5 billion since 1974, when this unfair law was placed upon our state, and billions of dollars at stake in the future. The resolution is very straightforward and clear in its language, and I'm not going to go through the details of it. Most of us have become familiar with all the favorable reasons why this ban should be lifted. There's a lot of work going on right now with the Department of Energy, information that I'm providing to them to affect their recommendation from Secretary O'Leary to the President and the President to the Congress that's holding hearings this spring on the Export Administration Act that's up for renewal in April. So it's a pretty quick time frame. That's why this resolution is, I believe it's important to move along as quickly as you can with due deliberation to send a clear message to Congress and to the President that we'd like to see the situation change, because it's unacceptable. The study that the Energy Department is conducting is on the pros and cons to the nation. I think we know what the pros are for Alaska, but of course our leaders elected at the federal level have a responsibility to the entire nation. We do have allies in California, and I think that may be what puts us over the top. It's a good environment right now with better than it has been in years. In the post-NAFTA period, with the President focused on Pacific Rim trade, and we do have some powerful enemies with the maritime interests and some of their folks in Congress that represent their interests, but we believe the facts are on our side, and this resolution clearly lays them out. So,
thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Green?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senator, I noticed that the fiscal note from Department...
Huh? Is my hair getting long?
Mr. Speaker.
No, I said Senator. This Senator.
Oh, that Speaker. Okay.
They're just hoping you run for the House again.
there's a fiscal note, zero fiscal note, and it seems to me by the very nature of this bill that we have been given a great disservice by the Department of Revenue to gloss over a zero fiscal note. There should be a very strongly positive fiscal note. I'm getting disgusted with our departments constantly giving zero fiscal notes when there, in fact, and quite often, is either a cost or a benefit, and they just get them in, they zero them out, and this is a classic example of a very, very bad fiscal note. As this moves on, I would suggest that we put something in here that shows that it's definitely, definitely to Alaska's favor to pass this out. I strongly support it, and I surely think this is a sends a wrong message.
Through the chair, Representative Green, it's a good point. I agree with you on the. I think the quality of the fiscal notes has gone down in the last year or so. I'm not saying in the last 4 years, but just the last year or so, something's amiss in the process that they go through or something. I don't understand it really, and that's why I felt compelled to mention the $2.5 billion figure that Governor Hickel also mentioned in his State of the State address, because there may be some analysis attached or somewhere in the file that makes reference to the money that we've lost in the past and what's to be gained in the future. But you're right, it's not explicitly stated there. So it's a good point.
Thank you very much. Senator, I've been looking over this for quite a number of years, filling the chair that Representative Green has now as chairman of Oil and Gas back in, I think, when the same organization that we served together in. And one of the things that struck me was that there really is an opportunity, but we need to, I think, do some work down on the West Coast and also with some of the major producers like ARCO, who I believe has now come out and said that they don't have a great incentive to support, this resolution, primarily because they own a lot of the facilities on the West Coast, and they own the oil and they own the ships that are transporting it. There really is a, yes, that's right, there's a corporate conflict of interest, I think, as far as Alaska's interest is concerned. And I think we need to send that message to them as well. And one way to do that, I was told, we heard a hearing here some time back from, I'll dig it up and send it over to you. It was really very good. And I thought the suggestion was excellent. It talked about spending a little time and money and maybe sending a delegation to go down and talk to the states, the western states, that there's a decided advantage to them to have this swap as well, and we know what it is to us. So I'm really pleased that you bring this before us, and I'm very supportive myself. I have been all along. And any other questions from the committee? And I don't believe we have anybody else here to testify. The chair is looking for a motion. Representative Finkelstein.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move this bill with individual recommendations.
Many subsequent percent joint resolution number 13. Rules is opposed to move. Any objections? Hearing none.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Resolution
thank you.
Is moved out of committee with individual recommendations. People, please sign. Thanks, Johnny. While you're signing that, the announcement that the chair has asked that we leave with you is that there'll be no meeting on Monday, President's Day. Wednesday, February 23rd, we'll be meeting again at 8:15, and we're going to hear HB 199, Oil and Gas Exploration Licensing. Licensing, yes, that's a new word from, a guy that
grew up
in the mountains of Idaho on the back of a moose, HB 398, Rights to Certain Tide and Submerged Land, and HJR 55, Economic Importance of Southeast Alaska Timber Harvest, and HJR 56, Exemption from Federal Packfish Management Strategy. And with that announcement, it is now 9:45, and we are adjourned. Thank you.